Dewey defeats Truman. That iconic 1948 headline from the Chicago Tribune has, of course, served as a cautionary tale for journalists ever since. And yet, remember when NBC declared Al Gore the winner in 2000 and had to retract? And then back in June, both Fox News and CNN initially botched the Supreme Court's decision on health care reform.
Oh, boy.
We have breaking news here on the Fox News channel. The individual mandate has been ruled unconstitutional.
The Supreme Court justices have struck down the individual mandate, the centerpiece of the health care legislation.
That was CNN before at Fox News, both reporting the opposite of what actually happened. As we know, the Supreme Court, in fact, upheld the individual mandate. So what are news organizations planning to try to get it right with this elections, especially with the pressure of social media, media that wasn't around in past elections? Brian Stelter covers media for The New York Times. Brian, you know, how have networks changed because of that misfire in 2000 with Al Gore?
For one thing, the networks say they generally won't call a state, especially a competitive state, just with exit poll results alone. They more frequently will wait for raw vote totals. But that wouldn't necessarily have avoided the outcome that we saw in 2000. There is a general sense of caution that didn't exist quite as highly back in 2000. And all of the networks, all of the executives I interviewed ahead of this year's election said is some version of the same sentence, that we'd rather be right than first.
Well, and of course, there were so many other questions around that election in 2000 having to do with the state of Florida and the candidate George W. Bush's brother, Jeb Bush, being the governor of Florida. I mean, there's just so many different factors there. But just as far as the straight ahead reporting of a tight election, how else are the networks, you know, kind of, you know, build firewalls and protect themselves from making a mistake?
I was struck by the fact that NBC actually physically seals off its decision desk from the rest of the newsroom. So information can't get in or out, except for the actual calls about projections for states. That's intended to avoid situations where news executives could be pressuring them to make a decision to catch up to other networks. But most viewers aren't going to punish a channel for taking a little longer to make a projection about a state.
Well, you can literally build that firewall between the reporters on air and the statisticians at a decision desk. I mean, a literal wall. But there are no walls anymore when it comes to the flow of information. You've got all this social media. We see anchors sitting at the desk reading the tweets. How can they stave that off?
And that's what I'll be watching for tonight, most specifically, the dissonance between the reactions online and the reactions on television and by the major newspapers, you know, the New York Times, Washington Post, and of course the major wire service in this country, the Associated Press. All of them will hold off to make a call, especially to make a presidential call. You know, the next president of the United States is blank until all the states have closed their voting locations, except for Alaska, which doesn't close till 1 a.m. Eastern time. And all of them will also wait until they are very confident in their projection. But we're going to see, I suspect, a lot of websites, especially partisan websites, try to call the election earlier based on their own criteria, a less rigorous set of criteria.
Well, but you say the AP, for instance, for one, sent a memo on Saturday to employees asking them to do what?
Not to spread that information, so not to spread the projections of others.
On Twitter, you know, by retweeting and stuff.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Because there is going to be a lot of noise on election night before we get to a more definitive result.
But how nervous are networks? You talk to them, and they're all taking the high road and saying they'd rather be right than early. How nervous are they, not just about, you know, social media beating them, but social media being wrong? There's been some great reporting. David Carr had a piece about how there was a tour during Sandy who was spreading rumors. BuzzFeed found out that it was actually somebody who was a campaign operative for a Republican congressional candidate. When he was found out, Shashank Tripathi, he had to step down. But he was wrong. He was spreading rumors, and reporters were reading him. This was information about Sandy. You've got the website, you know, is Twitter wrong, set up to sort of try to keep an eye on it.
Networks and newspapers have to be more skeptical and more careful not to repeat what they pick up online. That would apply in the case of last week with Hurricane Sandy, when CNN went on the air repeating that guy's rumor about flooding at the New York Stock Exchange before checking it out. I mean, for goodness sakes, they had a camera pointed on the floor of the Stock Exchange. They could have checked and looked at the camera before repeating that rumor. But the other option, the other thing that could happen, And I don't know which of these is going to happen, is maybe people are going to become more accepting of the fact that what they hear on CNN or networks like it is only the first draft of history, not necessarily the most accurate draft of history. On the web, things are self-healing. Mistakes can be corrected pretty quickly thanks to the virality of the web. But it's harder to correct things on television, and it's a lot harder to correct things in print, as I know all too well. It's a matter maybe of trying to get to a new normal where people know some sources are more reliable than others, and that they have to take all these things with grains of salt.
That's kind of sad, you know, that the new normal will be that it's okay to be wrong because we've got all this social media buzzing about and we haven't yet sorted it out
yet. Right, and if they're wrong, they'll correct it quickly. You know, on nights like election night, on the other hand, it's a huge opportunity to regain some trust, to do it better, to do it the right way, the way that's taught in journalism school.
Two sources, not just one tweet.
Yeah. You see polls that from lots of polling groups that show gradual decline in trust of the media among the public. That's an opportunity for the media to win people back. Every day, win people back. And election night's a huge chance to do that.
By the way, there you are with the New York Times, Brian Stelter, which used to be just a paper that would come out the morning after with the results of the night before. Now you are an online platform and tweeting and Facebook as well.
And every newspaper, like mine and many others, will be trying to mimic television on election night by having live blogs and, in some cases, live video newscasts. That's a big change from 2008, when we still had a relative monopoly on video coverage of elections. You still all pretty much had to be a television network. It was a lot harder back then to stream live video to the web. But now that it's getting so easy, I think we will see maybe even a dozen big websites like the New York Times and Politico have live newscasts tonight to give people the results. And we'll see if any of those can steal away a few of the viewers from television.
It's really quite amazing when you think of the incredible leaps. I'm not going to call them advances yet. I'm not quite sure. But how we didn't even have social media. Katie Couric on ABC is going to be their social media tracker.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't even have one of those 4 years ago.
That's right. Back in 2008, about 1/20 of the people that are on Twitter today were on there talking about the election. The surge in the popularity of these services is really sort of magnificent to behold. And when used correctly, it's a great way to improve journalism.
You gotta wonder, what's next? You know, in 4, 10 years, are we all going to be holograms in Ohio?
That'll be fun.
Brian, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Stelter of the New York Times. And I have a correction. Earlier, when we were talking about Colorado's ballot question on marijuana, I said Massachusetts had legalized small amounts. Steve McCrory tweeted us the correction. Massachusetts decriminalized small amounts of marijuana. You can still get fined for possessing it. Back in a minute, here and now.